Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. Welcome back to another episode of the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast. I'm your host, Mark R. LePage, and this is episode 6. In this episode, I'm speaking with Ian Harris, the co-founder of Arbuckle Industries and the co-director and producer of the new documentary film, Architecture. The film offers a unique glimpse into the world of studio-based design education through the eyes of a group of students finishing their final design projects at Pratt University's undergraduate architecture program. Ian premiered the film at the Newport Beach Film Festival just a few days before we sat down to record this conversation. So I appreciate that he took the time out of his busy schedule to speak with me. We discussed the film's development, the state of architectural education, the crisis within our own profession, and we even proposed a few solutions. It was a great conversation, so I know you're going to love this one. Let's get right into it. Here's the interview. Ian, welcome to the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast.
Hello, how's it going?
Yeah, it's going well. Thanks for being here and taking some time out. I know you're crazy busy right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on. Tons of emails flying in. Interested in trying to screen the film.
Yeah, you must have had some pretty exciting these past couple of weeks. Must have been really exciting.
Yeah, we weren't completely 100% like prepared in a sense for that premiere. It was a sort of a serendipitous moment where the woman who runs the programming for the art, architecture and design at Newport Beach reached out to us. So we'd sort of had an objective, you know, preparing for film festivals, and all of a sudden they're like, we really want you in. And so we're like, let's go with it. And then all of a sudden it was like,
take the opportunity while you can, right?
Yeah. And it's, you know, oh my gosh, we need, flyers, we need this, we need that. I'm like, you know, and are we going? Oh, we're going to go. Ian's going to go. Okay. Ian's going to go out there. Let's, you know, so it was a lot of like last minute stuff.
Right. Well, before we get into the film, let's start from the beginning. I want to get a little bit of background on you so everybody knows who you are and where you come from. So tell us a little bit about your story, you know, a little bit before film school, before architecture school, go way back and kind of give us this, you know, an idea of who you are. Tell us your story, where you come from, you know, why you chose to pursue architecture and all that.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio, and I originally sort of started off going to engineering school at Ohio State. And after being there for about a year, I had a close friend of mine that was actually at the University of Cincinnati in their architecture program. And one day I just came back, you know, on a break to come back to town, catch up with him. And I stumbled into the studio and sort of saw the design project he was doing. And it sort of clicked as far as my interests. I was always sort of interested in sort of like systems, sort of infrastructure, transportation. And that was sort of the route I was going in engineering. And seeing that project sort of was like, oh, wait, this is more of my my interest. Even further zoom back a little bit, I remember going up to Ohio State and, you know, you check off like which schools, you know, which kind of disciplines you might be interested in. I remember, never forget, like sitting down in the architecture one, cause that was one of the like three I checked off. And it was like mechanical, environmental and architecture. And I sat down in the architecture and the first thing that whoever was up speaking was like, said something along the lines of the economy. He's like, you know, really take someone that's really driven to be an architecture, because as soon as the economy slows down, you know, you're out of a job. And I was sort of like, ooh, you know, coming from a blue collar background, it sort of scared me away from jumping in sort of from the get go. But, you know, then I ended up transferring schools, went from Ohio State to the University of Cincinnati. What attracted me there was their co-op program, which, you know, for those that don't know, it's the way of, you know, every quarter you switch back and forth between studio and working in a professional sort of situation. And so I had a great opportunity to sort of work in San Francisco, work in New York while I was still sort of studying.
Wow, that's a great program. So you get to travel all over the country and work in different firms while you're in school?
Yeah, I mean, it's up to you, like where you want to go. You know, a lot of people stay local, and then a lot of people go around the country. There is sort of a broad, you know, 6-month terms where people sort of double up on a co-op and are able to go for 6 months. And I was also able to study abroad in Copenhagen for a summer, and sort of go, you know, see a whole bunch of Alvar Aalto work and all that, which was an amazing experience. So that sort of, you know, got me up to speed through design school. And then, you know, I get out and I'm probably jumping into some of your next questions, but
that's okay.
Just roll with it. Yeah.
Yeah,
so
going.
Yeah. So then, you know, I graduate. I went back out to San Francisco, which is where I had had some work previously through the co-op and through a contact, got working at a design firm called Hart Howerton, which is sort of a larger sort of land planning, landscape architecture. They do a lot of like resort type stuff all over the globe, which was exciting to work in. And I began to sort of like realize that there was something sort of missing in what I wanted out of the profession and what I was working in day to day. You know, and it's funny because I feel, you know, I wasn't completely naive to what the profession was like, because I'd had a fair bit of exposure to it while I was in school. But I was, even though I had that exposure, I was still somewhat unaware of the grind that it takes to, you know, go through your IDP and you know, matriculate in a sense to get towards the licensure. So and I went to University of Cincinnati. My year was the first one where it was it had been formerly a Bachelor's of Architecture professional degree, and we were the first class where it was a 4-year Bachelor's of Science. And that was, you know, jumping into that, I didn't really have any idea of what that completely meant, but obviously as I grew through the years, it became much more obvious that, oh, my degree is only a 4-year and I can't actually get licensed. So I'd actually have to go back for, you know, potentially 3 more years in a master's plus the debt to get licensed.
Wow.
So, you know, being 19 or 20, you know, you don't have a real great sort of comprehensive idea of what these things mean. At least I didn't.
Right.
People probably do, but I was naive. And so, you know, I'm out in San Francisco, I'm working, and a guy that's across me that just starts out of school, David Krantz, had, you know, a buddy at the time, you know, we're going out and getting, you know, after hours drinks after work with colleagues and stuff. And everyone's sort of talking about, you know, the good old days of studio and sort of rekindling these memories of the crazy experiences in studio. And David and I, you know, we're just like, man, these great sort of character types that exist in studio, because it's like weird little insular world. And both myself and David were really into sort of documentary films, you know, and just, you know, we were probably, you know, drinking a few beers in, and we were like, man, it'd be a great film. That'd be awesome to watch that, you know, assuming that someone had made it. You know, and you sober up and you look around online and no one has. And, you know, that sort of got us thinking, well, maybe, you know, maybe we should do it.
I think that's something a lot of architecture students think about and dream about, because it is a culture. It's very different than anything else I've ever experienced. And, you know, I think it's an excellent subject for a documentary. And I think, you know, many architects architecture students have probably thought about that and then just let it go. And you guys, kind of acted on it.
Yeah. And it was funny because there was a moment when we were thinking about it, and we actually stumbled into a filmmaking company while we were in San Francisco at some sort of art opening event. And it was Friday after work, we're down at this gallery, whole bunch of us, and there's these film guys, and we're just sort of like, hey, why don't we just go sort of talk to them? Because, being in the profession, there's no way you can sort of stop and go get a film degree and then come back. We knew that, we didn't want it to take multiple years to even begin to start the process. So we started talking to this company called Empty Kingdom, and they were completely supportive. They saw the vision for the project. And so we essentially started taking classes with this company. So we would actually, every weekend go sit down with them for a whole day and learn, okay, here's sound. We're going to do sound today. And then you're going to go practice it next weekend live on the streets. And then, the next couple classes will be lighting. And then, so we were doing sort of one-on-one classes with this production company. And then we would be sort of there, an extra crew for them. So we got to shoot in a lot of different environments. This is all while David and I are both sort of working in different design jobs in the Bay Area, and then really sort of saying, okay, let's do the pre-production of art culture. And that's, that's sort of how it got going.
So when was that? What year was that?
So I think that we met Henry from Empty Kingdom back in 2000 and probably towards the end of 2006. And then 2007 was when we sort of, really started preparing in earnest. Meanwhile, not telling our firms that we were preparing to basically leave, we're sort of thinking about it and seeing if it's a possibility, seeing if a school's going to be down to let us come in with cameras, and sort of hone in on what this concept was. And then, the summer of 2007, probably starting late spring when the school year was wrapping up, we just started sending, proposals off to every BARC program in the United States. And a lot of people ask why BARC and, instead of an MARC. And, it's to us, we wanted sort of the bright-eyed, fresh perspective of youth going into school and being in school and not really knowing what awaited them in the profession. So we however many, I think it was 125, give or take, BARC programs, and we just sent it out to everybody. Got the list, researched it down, went to everyone's website, find out who to contact, sent it off, and then every day at lunch, I was, getting on the phone and calling around and following up for weeks and weeks to sort of figure out who was seriously interested in letting us come in with cameras. We looked at SciArc. SciArc was a pretty substantial option. And then there were a handful in the Northeast, and we came out here, and when we met Pratt, we met the dean and the chair at the time, and they seemed like the most willing to sort of let us do our story and not really too afraid to sort of allow the story to unfold. And that was really critical for us. And they were also very supportive as far as going to the institution and sort of going to bat for us to try to make sure that the institution wasn't going to sort of shy away or, pull back on the project once we got done shooting and things like that. So we ended up there, and we sort of, just started recording almost 24/7 this one class of students in their final semester.
The film is called Architecture. Originally it had a different name, right?
Yeah, that's true.
What was the original name?
The original name was Architecture.
Right. And where's that term come from?
I feel like a lot of people that have gone to architecture school will sort of know that's a sort of tongue in cheek type of term that we refer to the studio environment. We had a website, we had all of our graphics were Architecture, we had a logo, we had developed this whole sort of brand around Architecture. In a playful but sort of poignant way, because we wanted something that was sort of popping and that would be catchy to a broader audience. And I'll never forget when sort of I would get calls from deans back when we were sending out this packet called Architecture, and I would get lectured by deans. Yeah. I've spent my whole career working in this world, and this term belittles the, and you know, at the time, you know, I'm what, however old was I? I was like 26. I was sort of like, yeah, okay, I got it. You know, I understand, but
I
it's
don't
also
need the
like,
lecture.
I don't need the lecture. Like, I'm, you know, I'm, it's a film. It's a film. You know, it's, I'm not doing, you know, a dissertation on architecture education. It's a film. So like, you know, and that was a great way for actually sort of in hindsight for us to filter through all the schools that was, you know, were a little, you know, sort of, you know, didn't have the guts in a sense to allow this camera crew to come in. You know, and that says a lot sort of the, to Tom Hammerhand at Pratt, his willingness to sort of let us come in, and document this world. But yeah, architorture was a funny term, and it was also, I mean, 2007, 8 was the stuff going on in Iraq. It was, you know, it was a time when the torture thing came up in a very negative light. So it was a good time to sort of change
right.
the name.
Right, right. I remember when I don't remember when you started making it, you know, public. I remember when you launched it. Or at least I remember when I learned about it, and it was architecture when I learned about it, and I would say that it probably resonated very well with architects. I think architects, you know, who've been through that culture and who've been through that process, clearly remember it, and I think that's a term that probably every architecture studio uses. You know, I've seen T-shirts with architecture on them. You know, I've made T-shirts myself with not that term, but other terms with similar sentiments. So. Do you think that helped with, you know, some really early preliminary buzz among the architecture community?
Oh, definitely. I mean, Dave and I did a sort of like a little stunt where, you know, we were living in San Francisco and there was protests in San Francisco all the time over, you know, all kinds of things. But I mean, 2008 was, you know, there was a lot of, or not 2008, 2007, 2006, there was a lot of sort of like protests going on. And David and I made a sign that said like, stop architorture. You know, with our logo, and we sort of like painted it, and we went down to Market Street and walked down the street, and I took photographs of Dave in this, you know, huge protest with this sign, you know, and we started posting that thing up, and it was like all over the place, you know. We were, you know, all these different languages, it's all over the globe on blogs and stuff like that. We were like, oh, you know, wow, Jesus, like this thing is just like wildfire. And it's funny though, because like in sort of the retrospect of us making this film, that brings up a big thing. Like we, you know, early on, there was this sort of like all the filmmakers in the film world, people were like, oh, this is a great idea. You know, you guys should, you know, mobilize this following, get them behind the project, you know, and Dave and I were like super active. We like had this blog going, and it was more sort of like an aggregator. Like we were just posting other content and writing our own stuff and getting like lots of hits. And we were doing a great job of like being sort of very socially active online with, you know, I mean, Twitter didn't even exist yet. Facebook had just sort of opened up to the public. I mean, this is how long ago we started this thing. So, you know, we were using all these tools and everything that existed at the time, but I think we almost built too much of momentum too early when, you know, for a film, it's, you know, there was a following to architecture and architorture and sort of like what that meant in that area, but it was taking so much energy to sort of like upkeep this momentum and this buzz of this project.
Right, hard to manage.
And then, you know, all of a sudden the economy implodes in 2008 when we get done shooting it. And there's, you know, our funding sort of well, which was mainly individual donations by architects, you know, small donations by architecture firms. All of a sudden that disappears. And, you know, Dave and I were like, okay, we have nothing. We put all of our money into this film to shoot it. We just shot it. We've got 200 hours of footage sitting here. You know, oh my God, we have no income source. We have nothing to fund this project. We've got, we're, you know, we were totally freaked out. So yeah, I'm probably going on crazy tangents, which I'm known to do, but, that's all good. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, it's good. The funding is very interesting to me. I mean, how was it ultimately funded?
So basically, I mean, it's difficult for me to sort of like know all of the final numbers on the project, but you know, a lot of it was David and I just sort of taking the money that we saved up from working in the profession for a few years and, you know, pushing it in. We got a large grant from the Arnold Brunner grant, by the Center for Architecture Foundation here in New York, we got that in, I think, 2010. Which essentially was the money that we used to edit the film. And then all of the funds to sort of color correct it, do the audio and composition stuff of late has been sort of, you know, our company sort of just pushing an investment into the film. So yeah, I mean, it was mainly, you know, David and I using our network of friends in the profession, family members, begging them for donations, if you will, to make it happen.
So, I mean, it's 10 years in the making, essentially. Are there any specific lessons you could share with either failure or success that you've learned from the project?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple different angles to sort of answer that question. You know, as a filmmaker, there's lots of lessons learned, for sure. And that's, you know, like one of the ones that I just mentioned was the aspect of how to sort of mobilize your following and to connect them with the project and make them sort of feel a part of it. Cause that's, you know, in the sort of modern day field of indie filmmaking and filmmaking, you know, you want your audience to basically be a part of the project as you produce it, and get them involved and pull them in to sort of use them as a resource to give you sort of input in the process of making the film. You know, looking back on it, you know, we were extremely naive to what it took to sort of make this film. And it's, I mean, even now looking at it, you know, how much energy it took to make a 25-minute short film is just completely ridiculous. And a lot of that was David and I learning, you know, by the fire along the way, producing our first film piece. I mean, we were shooting this in an attempt to make a feature film. But I think very intelligently, after going through many rounds of edits and spending a lot of energy revising edits, we decided to condense it into a really tight, dense, short film. You know, one of the great comments that came out of the premiere at the Q&A that I attended at the end, you know, there was a gentleman that was, you know, one person put it really specifically, he's like, you know, I really want to see more of some of these threads that you bring up, you know, like, you know, where's the rest of that? I want to see more of that. Why didn't you, you know, and we've gotten a lot of questions of, you know, why don't you guys shoot more schools, or why don't you, you know, continue to shoot this, you know? And it's like, you know, that's someone else's project, you know, like we're not doing a film that sort of encompasses all of our education. This is just, you know, jumping into one little world, you know, hanging out in that world, seeing what it's like, and reflecting upon the broader spectrum of what it is for architectural education. So, you know, we see it as like sort of like a really dense, like onion, or, you know, head of lettuce, where you peel back these layers and there's a lot of topics and aspects that you can sort of pull out and have conversations about. So that's a goal of ours, to have a lot of sort of discussions that stem out of this film.
The timing, I think the timing might be perfect, as long as it's taken you. I think there's a trend right now throughout society, and I see it happening in architecture as well, that we're becoming a less industrial society and we're moving toward being a more human society. I think the internet has played a huge role in that and has certainly encouraged architects to go online and kind of tell their personal stories. You know, through my blog and through my podcast, that's what I try to do. The guys over at ArchiSpeak podcast, I don't know if you listen to the ArchiSpeak podcast, you know, there's three architects that do a biweekly podcast and talk about the human side, sort of the hidden side of architecture, the things that people don't typically know. You know, I think that's a trend that's happening throughout our society. So what are your thoughts on this? Do you think this is where architecture is going, you know, kind of being, you know, having documented and gone through a process of really exposing the human side of architectural education, which is really what you've done, and exposed that to our society? Do you think that that's happening throughout the profession?
I mean, I think it's beginning, but there is, you know, we are so far away from people actually really giving a shit about architecture. And I say that sort of to the broad public, not just those that, you know, are highly educated. And that's sort of why David and I picked up the camera and left the practice, because, you know, I didn't need to be an architect. There's enough architects out there that have their dreams of producing their design ideas. My personal interest in built environment is sort of how it enables sort of our culture to evolve and deal with the problems that we have sort of laid out in front of us. And I personally felt that I could make more change by picking up a camera than I could by designing some buildings. And that was my personal choice. I think that, you know, while the topic of design is, you know, becoming more engaged by the broader public, I don't, you know, I still think it's looked at in the sense of, you know, the Apple products, you know, it's high end, you know, you pay a premium for design. Design is a premium. You know, it's great to have a nice product that works. It's great to have a really expensive building that works highly functionally, but I think it's a much more sort of like bottom up opportunity also that I think is happening through the economic shift and young designers going out there and sort of creating and developing their own projects from, you know, needs they see down the street from where they live in their local communities, and sort of creating a climate out of thin air. I think people doing that type of work is where the profession is evolving and changing. If you look at the profession of architecture, it's still a old white male profession. I mean, I know that it's more diverse than that, but it doesn't reflect the spectrum of American society. And you know, the way that cultures live in American society is very different from, you know, a certain segment. So there's a much more diversity in what is needed in the spaces that we're creating in this country. And I think that the profession of architects needs to reflect that better. I mean, you know, the way that men, women, you know, people of different cultures design is very different, and they all need to be at the table so that we design spaces that engage all those people, or a specific niche group. And I think that that's a problem that architecture has had, and it's sort of an identity crisis that has been brought to the surface with the economic implosion, because that model, while it's still going to be there, of the sort of top-down star architects, you know, there needs to be more diversity in it. And you're seeing some of that, but I don't know if, you know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, there's going to be this sort of consistent, you know, bottom-up bubbling culture that we see right now. And there's an opportunity to sort of highlight this, but I still think that most of the stuff that architects are talking about is two and four other architects, or at least to a very highly educated public. You know, it's still not at the level of, you know, an architecture TV channel. Like, we need, right, you know, even though those are fairly sort of dumbed down perspectives in a sense, you still need that out there to sort of engage a broader public, to empower them to think about the way things are made and built around them. And, you know, that's the only way that we're actually going to deal with all of the sort of socioeconomic and environmental issues that are posed in front of us.
Yeah, I agree with you. But I think that we are on the very early edges of a revolution in our profession. I really think in the next 10, 20 years, the profession is going to completely change. And I think it's going to happen without the rigidity and the industrial influence that architecture has been, bound by for all these years. And the internet is what's going to change that. The ability for me to be on this podcast and to say whatever I want to say and push it out there to, you know, as many people as I can, the more that becomes commonplace, and the more that we as architects do that, and the more that, you know, people like you do what you do, and the more people like I do, and the more like the guys from ArchiSpeak do that, it's going to influence others to do the same thing. And I think the frustration, I hear what you just said over and over again in the profession, where we're going through an identity crisis, and that we don't know who we are and where we are, and this box that we're within. But I think we're on the very edges of that changing.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you see it. I just I hope it continues. I think that, you know, it is very much, I mean, the hardest part is that we're talking about an industry that, you know, is, you know, immensely underpaid in a sense for the amount of education and time that's required to get to a point of sort of knowing really what you're doing. So, you know, if, you know, architects are generalists, so it's difficult to sort of hone in on a specific, you know, key value that we represent to society. It's this sort of like overarching umbrella sort of concept of what an architect can do. And so this, you know, in the past 10 years since I, you know, ever got involved with architecture and, you know, was coming out of school and everything, everyone's always saying that, you know, architects are these sort of masters of so many different disciplines. But, we sort of cannibalize and pull in, you know, tools from other places. You know, we're not the sort of masters of this great domain. We need to like forcefully insert ourselves and to train students to be able to sort of command those conversations. And I still think that we're training architecture students to sort of plug into this sort of star architect, omnipotent top designer with this giant pyramid that goes, you know, top down, and you know, the skills that are needed to sort of create your own project and to develop a business model and to do community sort of community engagement and present is not what we're doing. We're training architects to sort of talk to other architects. These are like huge overarching blanket statements for, I mean, there's programs out there that do this stuff. There's programs out there that are very much interested in sort of the public interest sort of side of things. But, you know, if you're looking at the whole thing, you know, we're still pumping out generations of architects that are going towards this structure that, you know, we're seeing that's not as high as a priority. So there is an identity crisis with people that are coming out. Like, what do I do with this degree? I wanted sort of more sort of cause or benefit and support to culture, and they're not getting it. And they're jumping off into like other professions. And that's risky. It's, you know, so I mean, there's huge opportunity, but you know, it's, there's definitely like pitfalls and fears, at least in the stuff that, you know, we shoot ourselves and the stuff that we produce with our production company. And it's difficult to sort of like transcend that and be creating video content that actually can be engaging and found by a broader public. You know, like there's lots of great like design blogs and podcasts and there's great like design sort of related video stuff, but I feel that, you know, a lot of it, most of the stuff, the content's being created is still fairly specific to the architectural community or design community, that people that already sort of get it. You know, there's so many design films that are out there that are beautiful, they're gorgeous. You know, you learn something by going in, but, you know, my mom in the Midwest is not going to watch that unless someone says, we're going to go watch a design film. Right. You know, so right. Like we still need to sort of change the entire beginning of how this is being discussed. And that's, you know, we still need all of this stuff, the discourse that exists. We just need to sort of like begin to like roll that over and change it and discover the underbelly of sort of the profession.
How do you think we do that? You have any ideas on how to get that started?
Sorry, I missed the beginning of that response.
I was just wondering what your thought was on how do we get there? That's part of what I'm doing and why I do it. Is to try to help change the profession from the architects out, to get architects to think differently and to realize that, you know, the traditional practice is not the only thing that we could be doing. We could be doing other things and still be architects. How do we change the mentality of the architect and change the way, you know, our society views us?
I have a trajectory or an interest, and that sort of relies in the world of sort of filmmaking. So, you know, our original goal with Architecture was it was a sort of different project. We hoped that it was going to be a character-based doc that was going to be a feature that would be made for a broad documentary viewing audience. What we shot and what we captured was not that film. That's the sort of beauty and terror of doing a documentary is, you know, you never really know what you're going to get, you know, in the can. And, you know, when we came back and started editing it, it's also why it took us so long to work on, is we kept sort of trying to make that film. We kept trying to force, you know, the stories of these students and what we captured into a sort of broad doc, and it wasn't working. And it was sort of crushing the sort of beautiful story of the studio. So, you know, we said, okay, let the footage tell us what it wants to be. And that's what our culture became. You know, David and I are working on other films. Dave is the co-producer on a documentary right now called Girls Show, and that's been shot and it's in post-production. And that's has sort of nothing to do with design. So, you know, we're also trying to sort of evolve as filmmakers, but there's a film script that we've sort of hashed out from art culture and pulled topics out of into a film project that we're referring to right now as Built. And in the sort of most general, sort of simple, you know, one-liner, it's essentially food ink for the built environment. You know, I think that, you know, we're interested in making a film that is an eye-opening, you know, mass media, broad audience documentary about the built environment. There has been films that have been made about the building, you know, industry and built environment. Manufactured Landscapes is a great one. Gary Huswitz, Urbanize is a good one, but I still feel like those, you know, they range from sort of like art films to, you know, inside baseball films about the design world that designers are going to love and watch. You know, I think you still need that. You need that broader audience appeal documentary that has real human stories of people being impacted by the built environment. So that film has, you know, a handful of architects. It's mainly not architects talking about architecture, because architects can only talk about architecture to other architects, really. They sort of honestly are not good about talking about architecture to people that don't understand it. And so, you know, it's us finding who those people are. And we've constructed a script around that. And sort of that's the next step, is to sort of hopefully use the momentum out of art culture to line up some funding and get that project rolling as sort of the next, you know, the next doc that we would produce, besides, you know, all the other video stuff that we're doing through our company.
Do you have a title for that new one?
Yeah, it's the working title is Built.
Built. I'll have to look for it.
Straight Built. Sounds all great. We have is a Twitter account right now. So it's called Built Film, or, you know, the @ Built Film. I've sort of started constructing a website for it. So just to sort of get it on the page. But yeah, if anybody out there looking to fund a documentary.
Yeah.
That's sort of where we want to go. And that's what needs to happen. But there's so many other different angles of how to work at it. You know, and that's just the one that we're attempting to do.
Yeah. And I think if lots of architects and lots of, you know, people who are interested in the subject hit it from different points of view. I mean, when you hit them with a feature film, is it going to be a feature? Is that the intent?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, a feature is the only, I mean, a short is a great, you know, medium. And I think art culture, our goal with art culture ultimately is to get this thing, you know, beyond doing sort of a tour through like AIA chapters, AIS chapters, getting school groups and sort of doing that.
Right.
Those types of screenings, which is, you know, I'm sort of going back on what I said, but that's sort of like talking to the architectural community.
Right.
And I think art culture is largely a film that is going to sort of create a lot of discussion within the architecture community, because it's going to be a way for them to sort of reflect and an impetus to have these conversations about how we're training architects and what type of profession we have in front of us. You know, I think, you know, the My Mom test in Ohio, she can watch art culture and learn a lot of stuff and get an understanding of this world. And I've shown it to like close friends of mine that don't know anything about design that really enjoyed it. But you know, I think that like where we need to go is, you know, we need, you know, we're looking at the sort of the world of design as if we were a chef before the Food Network existed. You know, like once we get out there beyond sort of talking to each other,
right,
then we have the real potential to spill over. And I think that interest is coming because, you know, people haven't really connected the dots about where, you know, the solution to our energy crisis is in our buildings. You know, the solution to a lot of issues is sort of within our built environment. It's how we develop land. It's how we use our infrastructure. These are all conversations that, you know, you're having in bits and pieces. You know, they're talking about it on political platforms. They're talking about it all over the place, but like no one's sort of cohesively putting that together and attaching it to sort of like our urban sort of planning process, our land development process, and how we're dealing with our buildings and energy. So it's these things need to be sort of like connected and really started to be discussed. And it's a really, really high level macro conversation that, you know, I think architects are, our sort of strength is being able to sort of jump and play that high low game of scale. But for a general layperson, it just doesn't, you know, they're not thinking in the city as a huge grid and system. So it's, you know, I think that's where our value is. And I think that that's where you can get these like amazing sort of shocks and stories out of this stuff that the general public would be interested in and be learning and, you know, changing the built environment around them so that we can deal with these issues that we're still sort of like, you know, grappling with.
Right. Right. I agree with you. And I think architects can save the world. You know, I say that all the time. And the reason I do what I do from an entrepreneur architect is because I think many architects, because they don't understand business and they don't understand how to be financially successful, they don't have the ability to get out there and make a big difference because they're struggling as businessmen and businesswomen. And so I look at it as if I can be out there teaching people how to be more successful as architects from a business point of view, then they can stop struggling and they can go out and save the world.
No, I mean, I think that leads me back to like the aspect of the question of like, sort of like how we're training our architects and like, you know, what are some of the improvements that can be made and sort of our perspective. And that's it. You know, like architects are coming out, not trained to be able to handle their own projects. You know, a lot of architects are coming out trained just to go straight into a big firm and sort of plug in with the newest technology, you know, the newest sort of software. And then from there, they start off at sort of ground zero, you know, while the previous 4 or 5, you know, years, you've been trained to hone in on your concept of design. And you get to the profession, you know, the amount of budget that's in the building for design is microscopic. It's, you know, 7%. 8%, you know, if you're lucky, it might be up to 10, you know, of a high-end complex skin building of Gehry, you know, what, you know, is that 14%? But still, it's like, there's everything else that architects have to do that is the business. And, you know, while that's scary, and I think we need to sort of like have people prepared to be able to design, obviously, you know, maybe there's different degrees that we need to be offering that's, you know, and other countries do this where, you know, it's sort of like the drafts person and, you know, where you could be trained in specific sort of like language or traits within the process of the building industry. And we're not training every architect to be the star architect.
Yeah, I love that idea. I love that we could become specialists. We can all be architects, but maybe we all have our little niche in making the whole system work.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, I think that's a great place to end it. I appreciate your time.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. This is a lot of fun.
Yeah. What's the best way to contact you if listeners wanted to, you know, say thank you or reach out and ask a question?
Yeah. So the Architculture, you know, we have a website for that, architculturefilm.com. And you can go on there and find information and sort of like about, you know, that project, its history, the trailers on there. You can sign up on that website and you can actually enter in where you're located so that when a screening becomes available anywhere near you, we'll send you an email so that you can like actually go see it. And that film will hopefully be sort of out more sort of like a video on demand by, you know, about a year from now. And our big goal is to actually get that out in sort of educational markets like K-12 so that high school students can be watching this thing in high school and discussing it and thinking about it as a career path. As far as contacting myself or David Krantz, who is the sort of co-producer director on the film, we have a company called Arbuckle Industries. So it's arbuckle-industries.com, and that's sort of where you can reach both of us. That's our contact information, all of our other films, short video format stuff we've done in, you know, about the High Line or various other architects.
So all the investors who want to invest in Built should go to that website. And
yeah, go to Arbuckle. You can follow us. You know, we have an Architculture Twitter account. It's just at Architculture. We have a Built account, which is at Built Film. You know, we have the Twitter stuff. But if you want to sort of shoot us an email, you can reach us through either Architculture or Arbuckle Industries.
Great. Awesome. Thanks for your time. I appreciate it. It's been great.
Yeah, Mark, it was a lot of fun.
So was I right? Wasn't that a great conversation? So what do you think? What are your thoughts on the topics we discussed in this episode? Head on over to the blog and leave a comment at entrearchitect.com/episode6. Next week, I'm heading west to Colorado. I'll be representing you, the Entrepreneur Architects Tribe, at AIA National Convention in Denver. I've been invited by AIA National to participate on stage for several events, and I'll be attending the screening of the Architecture film. I've been asked to contribute to a panel of students, educators, professionals, and Ian Harris to talk about the film and to discuss the current state of our architectural education system. I'm excited to be part of that event, and I hope to see you there. It's taking place on Friday, June 21st at 2 p.m. If you see me in Denver, make sure you introduce yourself and say hi. Two quick things before we wrap this up. First, if you haven't signed up for my free weekly newsletter, The Entrepreneur Architect Report, please do so right now by visiting entrearchitect.com/newsletter and subscribe. Last week alone, I had more than 100 people sign up, so you don't want to miss out. You won't be disappointed, I promise. Please go do that right now, entrearchitect.com/newsletter. Second, please visit iTunes and rate the Entrepreneur Architect podcast. If you liked my conversation with Ian, please leave me a short written review as well and tell me what you think. I want this show to be the best it can be, and your comments are incredibly helpful. And I've made it very simple. Just go to entrearchitect.com/iTunes, and you'll be sent straight to the place where you need to be to rate the show. That's entrearchitect.com/iTunes. And to those of you who've already left me a review, I thank you very much. And so that's it for this episode. My name is Mark R. LePage, and I am an Entrepreneur Architect. Thanks for listening.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entre Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.